So, just a couple of things about me. My name is Rolana Smith. I'm not a reverend, doctor, esteemed pastor. I'm married to Jeff Smith, 3.5 years. He is the opposite of me in many ways, like introvert, doesn't really like people. First time I met him at YAF, I didn't like him because he didn't like people. We have 3 cats. We're crazy cat people. Just a couple of random facts. In college, I shaved my hair off to about 1/2 inch. I've never broken a bone. And both Jeff and I were born within 3 miles of here and live within a mile of here-ish. So that's pretty unusual. I didn't grow up in Mountain View, but I was born in Mountain View and I live in Mountain View. I became a Christian right before my 17th birthday through Young Life. And the only question that God had me answer, I didn't believe the Bible was true, I didn't have any doctrine set or believe in any of it, but I did believe that God was good, and that's what he challenged me with. And so he said, do you think that I'm good, and do you think that Jesus is real? And I could be like, yeah, that's for sure. So he had brought me to that point, and then did doctrine later. So that was the main question. And that's important because you guys have been dealing with all these like questions that a lot of them don't have real answers to or really concrete answers to. And tonight's Why Do Bad Things Happen is kind of similar to that. So before I get started, do people need... everyone have their Bible? We're going to go through some verses. If not, I have printout of verses. Anyone want one?
Sure.
All right, I'm going to pass around. I have 9, so if there's more than 9 people that need it. Thank you. There's a lot. We're not going to be going over all of it, per se. All right, in the meantime, who has been paddle boating? Anyone? Okay, what is your general experience with it? Liked it? Not liked it? Okay. Thumbs down? General consensus? Anyone have a thumbs up on paddle boating? Okay, a couple people. Okay, all right, all right. We'll get back to that. That's an important setup question as to why bad things happen. So just a couple of things before we go into this. First of all, this is like a topical teaching, which means we're not going to go through one passage. When that happens, whenever I go through any verse, this is not necessarily what the author, what their main point is or what they're trying to say, but it is some sort of doctrinal truth that we're drawing from it. So make sure, you know, if you're like, this verse says this, check the context and what the author is saying. Topical studies, you kind of have to preface with that so that you don't take verses out of context. Second, we will go through some really concrete answers, but these are not answers that you use with other people who are in pain when they're like, I'm really hurting right now. And you're like, I have an answer. Boom. Okay, don't do that because that will make them cry and you will not be a good friend. So we are going to try to tackle this question, but it is not meant as a tool to minimize pain, and that's really crucial. And third, why questions are bad questions when it comes to God, because he's mysterious. And so I'm going to take my best stab at as to why I think the Bible has answers to this, but I'm not God, so leave lots of room for his mysteriousness, and he might just do things because he's God. That's just my preface. So the question as to why bad things happen actually has a lot of different questions behind that. So what we're going to talk about is, just at the beginning, what is the real question behind that? And for everybody, it's a little bit different. When you're asking why bad things happen, very rarely are you actually asking technically as to why bad things happen. So I'm just going to give a couple of questions and see if you can relate to any of them or if you can think of the question behind the question for you. So sometimes it's, why does God do bad things? Why does God allow bad things? Why do bad things happen to good people? Why is life so hard? Why am I in pain? And how can I find happiness? So those are just kind of some of the common reasons as to why we ask why bad things happen. So let's just take a little interactive time, and we'll go through some of those, and let's try to figure out what the belief about God is behind those questions. And just to also preface, we all have beliefs about God that are not true. And in our life, we like run into something, or we run into scripture, or we run into a life experience, and God uses that to kind of correct our view of him. And by the end of this life, we're not going to have a totally correct view, but hopefully the more steps we take, the more we'll kind of understand him a little bit better. So this isn't an exercise in, like, you have a wrong belief about God. We all do. So let's just find out, like, what is the belief behind the question? So if somebody asks, why does God do bad things? What would be a belief behind that? A wrong belief about God. Jeff?
God does bad things.
God does bad things. Very true. What else?
God is not supposed to do bad things.
God is not supposed to do bad things. Very good.
That we know the definition of good things.
That we know the definition of good things. This is so much different than junior high, because you guys, like, have good answers. Sorry, what were you saying?
Bad things happen.
Bad things happen. Good. That's a good one. God controls everything that happens. Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Yeah, I have just a couple. God is not good. God does evil things. God is not trustworthy. God is to blame. Okay, so what about why does God allow bad things to happen? It's slightly different. Are there any other beliefs in there? God can prevent bad things from happening. Good.
Because we deserve it.
Okay. We deserve good things or bad things?
Bad things.
Bad things. Good. Yeah, just a couple. Life shouldn't be this way. God is withdrawn. God doesn't mind suffering. God is a tough guy. These are just, they're not like, there's not one right answer. Why do bad things happen to good people? What do you guys think? Beliefs behind that.
Good people should have good things happen to them.
Good people should have good things.
There's a difference between good and bad people.
Yep, good and bad people. Other thoughts? I also have, I am good, justice can be found, life should be fair, God is tricky and unfair, I deserve good. Why is life so hard? What would be the belief behind that?
Life should be easy.
Life should be easy. Is that what you're going to say, Jeff?
God's dependent on the animals.
God's the kid on the anthill with the megaphone?
Magnifico.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Very true. He's a tyrant.
God doesn't care that life is hard.
God doesn't care that life is hard. Yeah. Others have it better. God is withholding from me. I deserve goodness. Yeah, so just take like 30 seconds in your mind and think about when you're asking this question, why do bad things happen, what would your question be? Like, what is the actual root behind that? And maybe you don't really ask this question and you're just interested in listening. But if you do have a question, just take a second to think about what's behind that. Does anyone want to share what their question is? What is it?
I don't deserve this.
I don't deserve this. Okay. Like bad things?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why I would ask.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's good. All right. So we're going to tackle some actual answers, and then we'll talk a little bit about hope and how to relate to others in pain. So I propose four reasons as to why bad things happen, and we'll go over them. I'll just list them, and then we'll go over them in more detail. First, sin, ours and other people's. Second, spiritual warfare. There is an enemy. He is real. There's a savior. He is real. Third, misplaced expectations. And fourth, the fallen world. So let's talk about sin a little bit. So, can someone read Romans 3:23?
I got it.
Thank you.
For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and are justified by His grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus.
Great. Thanks. So, very obvious, right? Like, we all sin. If you don't know that, then that's a whole another subject, and this question is going to be a lot harder for you to tackle. If you do know that you sin, then you know that you've hurt others. And there are 7+ billion of us on this planet. So even if everyone only committed one sin, that's still a lot of sin. And that's still a lot of negative things that are happening. And the more we grow close to God, the more we realize we actually sin a lot more than once in our lifetime. So that means we are hurting others and they are hurting us, intentionally or unintentionally. So that is just one very basic reason as to why bad things are happening. And if you look at your bad situation, sometimes you can find the root and sometimes you can't. And I really do think it's a combination of most of these. But some of it is really like, my coworker was mean. My boyfriend was really mean to me. He yelled at me. And you're thinking about a situation, if it involves another person, then on some level somewhere, one or both of you have probably hurt each other. And that causes pain. Ecclesiastes 7:20 says, surely there is not a righteous man on earth who does good and never sins. So we're all in this condition together. We all have it. We were born with it. And we continue to, no matter how much we try, to continue to hurt each other. And as most of us know, the people we hurt the most are the people we love the most, which is sad. 1 John 1:8 says, if we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. And as a side note, if you can't connect with how you hurt people, it's going to be really hard to move on and forgive others when they hurt you. And that actually affects this question a lot. And there's great parables about it that Jesus talks about. So I would just encourage you to ask God to help you get in touch with that if you're not. If you're on the shame and guilt side, then God says don't feel condemned. There's a difference between godly sorrow and like just being connected. So just a couple of questions, like, do you know that you sin? Honestly, I can forget sometimes until I actually see the effect of my sin. So it's not like you have to go around being like, I'm a sinner. This is so terrible. I'm the worst person ever. You're not. You're a normal person who sins, and you hurt people, and people hurt you. And that's why Jesus came. So this isn't a shame talk. But if you've managed your environment well enough, when I first was a Christian, I was like, terrible person, extremely selfish. I could see my sin all over the place. I have managed my environment well enough that it really takes God to show me how I've hurt people. And I'm actually thankful for those moments, so I don't walk around thinking like, oh, I don't sin that much. It's not that bad. Because it is. So, do you know that you sin? Like, do you really connect with it, not just intellectually? Do you expect others to be perfect? Do you forgive yourself? Do you forgive others? And what does God's forgiveness do for you? Not just like, oh, he saves me. But what is it like when you actually reflect on his forgiveness for you now? What does that do for you? Do you punish yourself or do you accept that? Do you allow him to bring joy into that? And God gives us consequences. And another question that might go with this is why do good people or innocent people have to deal with the effects of someone else's sin? And the clearest way to think about that is when we think of mass shootings. Why do these kids have to suffer for someone else's sin? And that kind of goes back to the sovereignty of God and how even death cannot, God can conquer even death. And he is sovereign above that, and death is not the end. But if we were not able to see our consequences, we would also not repent, I think. Our sin is most in our face when we see how we've negatively affected someone else. Because we're relational people. So the second, anytime you have any questions or thoughts, just like stop me and ask me a question or say something. So the second topic is spiritual warfare. So can someone read Ephesians 6, 10 through 12?
Strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic power over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly bodies.
Thank you. So I don't know what background you come from. Certain denominations, or if you didn't grow up with any spirituality in your household, sometimes this can be like a really big one to forget, that there's like an actual battle that we are in. When I was not a Christian, I totally explored the whole like witchcraft business, and my dad would like talk to me about ghosts, and we would try to communicate with them and all this like wacky business. And then I became a Christian and totally ignored spiritual warfare for probably 5 years because I thought it was like all a hoax. But then the more I read about Jesus and demons, the more I realized like there's an actual like real spiritual realm that we're in, and there are angels and demons, and there is an enemy. And the best time that God illustrated that to me was one time in college. I was just crying my eyes out, really depressed. We couldn't figure out what was going on. My friends would like read scripture over me. And finally, one of the guys was like, I'm just going to pray for you. And he really rebuked any lies and demons of lies. And I instantly felt like this different person. Now, this is not like some anecdote where you like go to a depressed person and try to heal them. And that wasn't the point of that. But it made me realize like, oh, there are actual spiritual forces at taking place here that do actually affect me. And in that specific case, that was the cause for my depression. It wasn't linked to circumstance or to anything going on. And God helped me to say, you don't need to be afraid of this. You just need to be aware of it. And sometimes when I'm scratching my head going like, why is this happening? I'm so frustrated. I'm like, oh yeah, there's an enemy out to get me. And God is bigger than that, but that is real. And we deal with that. So some denominations will go really crazy with that and we'll have lots of like, that's all they talk about. And others like totally ignore that. And you mention the name demon or like the word demon. And it's like, it's kind of like he who shall not be named. So wherever background you're from, that's fine. But just keep in mind that that's an actual part that plays a role as to why bad things happen. And keep in mind also, if you read Job, that you see that God has power over Satan. And so it's not like we're in a battle that we know we're going to lose. We're in a battle we know we're going to win because of God. But that doesn't mean being on God's side means that you don't see bloodshed or that you don't see shrapnel or that you're not in action. We're not, there's no bystanders. Paul said that in a sermon recently. no water boy or bench warmers. We're in it. And if we forget that, then we can get in trouble. And I forget that all the time until I'm faced with something bad and I'm like, why is this happening? And then God's like, because, you know, this thing? Yeah. We're in a war. Matthew 4, 1. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. Just another illustration that even Jesus was tempted and faced the spiritual warfare. And he's not the only one who faces it. So it's not like, Jesus did it, and I'm just back here. In Job 1:9, then Satan answered the Lord and said, does Job fear God for no reason? So he's out to test us and out to see if our faith is real. Knock us off our faith, and like Screw Tape Letters is a great example of that by C.S. Lewis, if you ever have read that. Just a couple of thoughtful questions. What are your thoughts on spiritual warfare? Do you know it exists? Do you pretend it doesn't? Are you afraid to think about that? You don't need to be afraid because God has power over that, but it is kind of scary to think about. Does it sound hokey or real? Do you believe that this life is a battleground, that there are actual enemies that aren't human? If you don't, that really can be exploited. God does not want us to, like, there's a danger in, like, I'm going to explore, like, every passage of demon things and, like, get really into it, because that's weird. Demon and Satan exploits that too. But God does ask us to be, like, wise and thoughtful, and not just to, like, pretend that bad doesn't happen and that there aren't spiritual forces. Okay, the third one, which is my favorite topic, is misplaced expectations. And this is probably the one I think we're all going to relate to the most. I'm just going to read Romans 18 through 25, 8:18 through 25. It's a little bit long. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing to the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for adoptions as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. Now hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we will wait for it with patience. So it's a really long passage because Paul the Apostle, not Paul Taylor, is a little bit wordy. But the gist of it really is that all of creation, all of the physical world, our bodies, are waiting for redemption. And I think this is a powerful passage because I think what we do in life is we expect this world to satisfy us. And that expectation is not bad. We are built for something better than this world. We are built for satisfaction, for our soul to be fed and our longings to be met. But this world can't do it, and that's we end up turning to ourselves and our idols to make that happen. So the unmet expectations are meant for a different world. They're meant for the world beyond this, for heaven and for God. And how many times in life are we upset, not because there's a lot of actual pain, but because we're just groaning for redemption, and we're just mad that we're not getting it now. And so there's a couple of ways that I see this. There's this, like, when you feel this constant frustration and you feel that toiling that we all do in the Silicon Valley, and we're, like, toiling to, like, make this life the way we want it, and then you're frustrated because it can't satisfy. There's kind of like three general directions that you can be facing. The first one is idealistic, like this world will satisfy you. And you keep striving for that. You keep striving for the better job and for the perfect relationship and to be sin-free and to be, you know, a good neighbor and whatever is on your list. You keep striving for it, hoping to obtain it. And ultimately that will leave you disappointed because you're not going to be perfect in this life. Neither is your significant other, if you have one. Neither is your job. Your job will never satisfy you the way you are meant to be satisfied. Nothing, no person, no thing can provide that for you in this life. And when they do, it is a temporary gift to remind you of what is coming. The second stance to have is cynical. I don't know if anybody in this group has ever been there. I have not, obviously. That was sarcasm. That's spending our life avoiding pain and pretending life doesn't suck. Always expecting bad. So this is like, God is going to give me bad. I'm expecting it. And who cares? But really what we're doing is we're just avoiding pain. Attempting to. And it just leaks out everywhere. And we're a mess. And people don't like being around us because we're just like grumpy and mean. And perfect, like, we end up doing like that cyclical cycle. You know, guys, what I'm talking about. You perpetrate it, yeah. You're like, this is like, friends are mean to me, and then you're mean to them, and then they're mean to you, and you're like, I said so. It's like, well, it's because you ignored them. So that's the cynical side. And then the third, which is kind of a balance and is really hard, is realistic and hopeful. Knowing that life will disappoint you, knowing that people will disappoint you, knowing that God is bigger and breaks into our world and provides joy and a glimpse of him all over the place. So that's my favorite option. I don't stay there very often. So, and expecting the world to fail you doesn't mean that it doesn't hurt when it does. It just means that you're not, like, surprised and then even more devastated because you were hoping to find satisfaction in this life. So my favorite example of this is when I was first married. Sometimes, like, Jeff would be human and would do something bad. I don't know if you've ever met a human who's done that. and I would be, like, in the car, like, enraged. And then God would be like, are you expecting him to be perfect? And I was like, oh, that's what that was. And so, of course, whatever he did still hurt, but it was, like, such a burden off my shoulders because I was like, oh, yeah, he's human. Of course he's going to, like, upset me. And, of course, probably in my reaction and in a lot of things I do, I'm upsetting him and I hurt him and I'm selfish. And so I think a lot of times unnecessary pain can be avoided if we just remember the context of where we're living and that this world can't satisfy. And again, that doesn't take the pain away, but sometimes it puts it in the right perspective where it's not as overwhelming. So the real question then I would ask you is, like, where are you? And obviously we flip-flop between those three. And then also, are you still trying to make your world perfect or yourself perfect? Is that something you are actively striving towards? And now God does say, like, we should be perfect like him, so that verse is, like, not helpful in this context. but Jesus said it, so it's true. Did Jesus say it? Anyone? Okay. We'll pretend Jesus said it. So we obviously are striving towards, like, being better. But if we put our hope in our perfection, you'll be disappointed. So that's what I mean by that. Okay, and lastly, the fallen world. Just very practically, sometimes we forget that this world, this earth, is very broken. And it has been cursed. So Genesis 3:17 says, let me find it. To Adam he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. So this world is broken. We see this because there's disease. We see this because our bodies are deteriorating. We see this because if you, like, work out a lot and then you eat one brownie, you gain it all back. And you, like, are striving to live forever and that doesn't work. So, like, we know that our world is, like, broken. And if you don't know that, you will. So that's just another real thing. Like, no sin involved, except for Adam's. Not even spiritual warfare. This world is broken. You are going to die. I'm sorry if you did not know that. Please talk to Paul after. So we just live in a very, like, broken earth. And now, on the flip side of that, because, you know, we're in a green culture, this does not mean that you trash the planet or trash yourself or just, like, sit on the couch all day eating, like, as many fried food as you can so you, like, walk around, like, 800 pounds. Like, do not, like, that doesn't mean we neglect the physical world or our physical bodies. It just means that it's broken and we have to accept that, and you're going to get wrinkles and you're going to get gray hairs, and hopefully they'll look cute on you, because if not, you have to be okay with that too. I found my first gray hair, like, last week. A couple weeks ago, I felt so mature. I was like, I'm gaining in wisdom. That's my way of accepting our broken world. Yeah, so that's just, like, a very real, a real thing that we have to live in. Romans 5:12 said, therefore, just as sin came into the world through one man and death through sin, so death spanned all man because of all have sinned. So we are cursed with it. Even babies have this curse of sin, of this cursed world. Women, childbearing is painful because of this. Child rearing is painful because of this. Work and the toil that comes with work is painful because of this. In heaven, my best example of heaven to me, and who knows if this is true or not, is that, like, I'm going to learn how to build a chair, and I'm going to suck at it, and I'm going to sit on it, and I'll, like, topple over. And that's a failure, but it'll be fine. And it's, like, innovative and engineering and, like, woodmanship, whatever that's called. And it'll be great because I'm learning, and it's not like toiling, like, oh my gosh, this is so frustrating, like, my boss is mad at me and he has these wrong expectations and the wood cracked. It's like fun learning and learning through failure in a happy way without that toil. So yeah, we live in a fallen world. Okay, paddle boating. So this is my example as to why bad things happen. So Jeff and I decided to go on a date once, and we went paddle boating, my suggestion. I thought it was awesome. I had a great time. You know, it wasn't too difficult, and I just thought that was great. Fast forward, like, a year later, we're at Jordan, the old high school pastor's going away thing. I'm in a boat with Paul and Jordan and Judy, Herming House, and we're, like, racing. We are totally losing. And, like, at one point, I'm, like, paddling with Jordan. I'm like, see, it's really just not really that difficult. At one point, he stopped, And I realized how difficult paddle boating was, and I realized that Jeff had carried me our entire date, and he was doing all the work, and I was just like, oh, this is really fun, honey, like, we should do this more often. And he's like, I hate this, there's wind. And if you actually have been the person paddle boating sucks and is really difficult and is not fun because, like, there's wind and you can't go anywhere and it's a lot of work. And the way I relate this to God is I feel like sometimes we're kind of in our, like, little la-la land. We're like, this isn't too bad. Like, the world is fine. Like, my job is fine and my friends are fine. And it's because God is the one paddling. And every so often, he lets go of the pedals a little bit, and we kind of realize the real world that we're in. And this is really crucial for a couple of reasons. First of all, if we don't know the real world, then we're going to think this world will satisfy us. And it doesn't. And there are eternal consequences to thinking that we don't need God and that this world doesn't need God. That groaning for redemption, however painful it is vital to actually open our eyes to what's really going on. And it took me a while to get to this place, but I'd rather live in the real world with my eyes open and with pain than kind of pretending in the ignorance is bliss category that things are fine. Because there are consequences for that as well. And a lot of it is that we rely on ourselves. So I don't think God is, like, out to get us when he takes the feet off the paddle. I think he's like, you're growing up. It's time to look at what the real world is like, which is that this world totally sucks. Like, it blows. It's hard. We hurt each other. We don't like that we hurt each other. We don't like that other people hurt us. And we don't like that our bodies are dying. And we don't like that work is so hard, and these good things that we know are good are, like, so much work, and sometimes we don't see why we do the good things that we do. And so I just kind of think, like, I'm in this paddle boat with God, and when he makes it easy for me, that's a season and a gift for that season, and that's not really the way the real world operates very often. And I can be thankful for that joy when I have it, or that happiness when I have it, but it is not the happiness is not found in this world. So just a couple of things on hope. We're going to give you guys sheets that have, like, all these verses on it, so I'm not going to go over every verse right now. But Romans 3:23, which we read earlier, 24 talks about the redemption we have in Jesus. That Jesus really did burst into this world and save us from the suckiness that we live in. 1 John 2:17, we are promised a perfect life after this when we believe in him. There is something that we can, like, actually anchor our hope into. Like, when I get frustrated at work, I really do think about, like, making a poor chair in heaven and how that's, like, great and fun. And at one point, how I'll make a better chair in heaven. And who knows if that's actually going to happen. But that kind of frees me from this, like, work is toil mentality. There is something real I can anchor my hope into. And it's God, and it's his new creation that he will actually make. And it is a physical one. Romans 8:28 and then 31 through 32. Sometimes we wonder why God allows us to suffer, and we forget that God not only allowed himself to suffer, but inflicted suffering upon himself. And that's a really comforting thought. Like, he's not asking us to do anything or go through anything that he himself was not willing to do. Also, if you have a wrong view of God, you may think that God doesn't care about your suffering, but really he weeps when we weep, is really upset when children are being harmed, when we are being harmed, when we are in real pain. And that's important to anchor onto as well. Sometimes if someone is really mean and I really can't talk to anyone about it, I'm just like, God, you see this, right? And he's like, yeah, that's terrible. And that really helps me go, it's not like, yes, I'm allowing that. Ha ha, Rolana, what do you think about that? It's like, yeah, he's like, yeah, that sucks. I'm sorry. Psalm 130, which is one of the Psalms of Ascent that we went through, really cries out to God for mercy, and we can and should call out to God in our times of need. This summer, I had a friend of mine who died. Not only that, he was living with some of our best friends that watched him die, had to call his dad to tell him that his son had died. And on my way to visit them, all I could think was this psalm, and was like, Lord, have mercy. Lord, have mercy. And it was just such an intense time. And that's okay. And it wasn't like, God, you shouldn't have done this. And if you feel that, you can tell him that too and should tell him that. But it was just this, like, have mercy on their souls. Have mercy on the on these parents. Have mercy on these friends of ours. And God can take it, even if you're really mad, and even if you want to ignore him, and even if you're just like, just so angry that you can't even like express to him anything good. He can handle that, and he will work through that. Galatians 6:9, we reap what we sow. So sometimes we think like, I'm just going to give up, the world is like messed up anyways. And Galatians and Hebrews really like asks us to fight the good fight, and that it's worth it, even if we can't see it. And so know that God does not use our pain in vain, and know that God does not use our efforts in vain either. Our efforts that are for him. The last thing is, just left my place, sorry. I think it's important when you're dealing, especially, it's important to remember that tragedy in life is completely inescapable. The weight of the tragedy will depend on what life you're living. But everyone will be unsatisfied. Everyone will experience their version of tragedy. And everyone, I think, on some level will deal with, on some basic level, extreme tragedy. And I definitely did not think that was going to be my life. But I've dealt with my dad dying. I've dealt with friends getting separated. Just a lot of things that you don't want to go through. My friends, they lost their child. We all know these stories. Some of us have lived them. Some of them of us haven't. But if you're focused on controlling your life so that it's perfect, it's going to be that much harder when you realize that you can't secure your life away from tragedy. And I realized this with tsunamis, actually. I was thinking about this because at one point, like, Jeff and I were just married, and I was like, okay, what would be, like, the best place to live ever? And I realized what I was doing was, like, trying to stay away from crime and, like I was trying to make the best life, right? Like, I'm going to find a place that is secure. And God was like, there is no place on this earth where you can guarantee yourself security. Like, a tsunami can hit, an earthquake can hit. Just, like, just physical disaster can just ruin all of those, like, carefully calculated plans. And it really set me free from, like, okay, so that means I just follow God instead of, like, calculate and orchestrate and plan and plot, and because that just doesn't work. Okay, so there's lots of hope, so don't lose sight of the hope. Think of Christine's story, because that was great. okay, just quick note on responding to people in pain. So if you look at John 11, where Jesus allowed Lazarus to die, and then he was dealing with Mary and Martha, there are two things that he did. He had an established relationship with them, and he spoke truth to them, and he wept with them. So the established relationship is like the precursor. So someone you've never met opens up to you, is vulnerable. If I just met you and was telling you that my dad died, and you just said, like, well, God is good, that would just shut me down. I'd be like, thanks, I know that. So don't do that. He had an established relationship in order to talk truth into them. Obviously, if God is really putting something on your heart to tell them, then you tell them. But generally, like, that minimizes pain when you just, like, give people pat answers. But Jesus did speak truth into their life. He said, he will rise again with me. He really spoke something true to them. And then he wept with them. It can be hard to experience other people's pain, but that really allows you entrance into their life. If I know what that you understand my pain, I'm much more willing to listen to what God is telling you. When I was 16, I had just gone through one of the hardest seasons of my life. I was sitting with a nurse, and it was like an entrance interview, and she had asked me all about my relationship with my parents and all these things, and she started crying. And to me, it was the first time I realized that I had gone through pain and that somebody had compassion, and that was a picture of God to me. And then she could have said anything comforting, and I would have accepted it, and it wouldn't have felt minimizing because she had just cried for me. I wasn't even crying. I didn't quite realize that I was in pain, and she allowed me to go through the pain and then allowed God to heal me through that. One of my friends, her mom, got a really quick progressive stage of cancer this year, a student friend of mine, and died just recently. And I was just talking to her in, Santa Cruz together, and we're kind of sharing how hard it is losing a parent. And she had said this really profound thing to me. She said, joy is a choice beyond circumstance. And I just think that's really important to anchor onto. Like, joy is found in God and not in our circumstances. And yes, we can be happy and thankful. Like, okay, God, I'm really glad. Like, you know, I like to bike to work. And it's like, oh, I'm glad that was, like, a good ride. And one time I almost beat Paul to his house, and that was great. And he was in the car. And so it's like, you can, like, take joy in that. And you read Lamentations, and it's like, eat and drink and be merry because everything else is vain. And there's some truth to that. Like, enjoy life, enjoy the food in the back, and enjoy each other's company. But real joy is beyond that. Real joy is beyond if your friends are being nice to you in the moment, or if this world is hitting you hard or not. And that's just something I try to, when I'm being like grumbly and mean, that's something I try to anchor onto. And the fact that she said that and had just lost her mom meant a lot to me, because she was in not necessarily a place where she can just, like, grasp onto joy. And she's in the place where you'd expect her to just be angry and be like, who cares about joy and happiness? There's none right here. Her mom was her best friend in that case. So just, like, deal, like, let that sink in when you're trying to find happiness in this world, that joy is a response beyond that.